Today on Focal Point with Pastor Mike Fabares.
If you and I want to avoid that incessant, continual, insidious temptation to compromise the truth for convenient deceptions, you and I need to trust in God more than we trust in our lives. And you recognize you don't lie unless you're putting some stock in that lie.
Tell white lies? You know, most people in our society view white lies as a sign of civility, an untruth about something trivial to avoid hurting someone's feelings. Well, today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares is continuing a series called Saints Who Lie, and we're in 1 Samuel. We've just reached chapter 21, where David tells a white lie that on the surface seems justifiable. However, his harmless lie eventually leads to the death of 85 priests. Well, here's Pastor Mike to explain.
David valued his reputation. He valued his stomach more than he valued honesty. Would you jot this down? If you and I are going to avoid the incessant, relentless temptation to compromising honesty with these convenient deceptions, you and I need to value. We need to value truth. We need to value honesty more than we value ourselves. And you can put anything underneath that you want, because in our lives we value our reputation, we value our meals, we value our money. And if I can just fudge on this just a little bit, see, I can have more money because the government won't get as much, or all I can do this, and this may help my business in surviving. You know, I can keep that client if I just tell them that we're moving that direction, and you know, we've ordered one of those machines, and we're soon going to be up with our competitors. So stay with us. If I can just bend the truth a little bit, you know, then it'll be okay, because I'll be able to benefit from that. When you do that, you show that you love you more than you love truth. You show that you love yourself more than you love honesty. And God would want the king of Israel's heart to beat with a passion for truth. And David isn't there yet. That's one of the reasons he's not on the throne yet. He says, if I'm going to have a man after my own heart on the throne, oh, he's got to be zealous for the honor of God. And he's already shown he's got the core material to do that. But he's also got to be a man of truth. And as we'll see in the Psalms later, not today, but another time, we'll see that his heart did eventually beat for truth. And he longed for truth in his innermost being. He wanted to be a man of integrity. Right now, he was willing to trash his integrity for 5 loaves of bread and a big giant sword. What have you cashed in your honesty and integrity for? Your precious reputation, a few extra bucks come tax time, another client so that you can make it this month, so that people think you're nice and polite because you didn't offend them by telling them the truth. What have you cashed it in for? I'll try to give you some examples at the top of the hour, but I'll tell you this, a lot more than that. There's a lot of things that compel us to compromise. And you and I need to work hard to say, you know what, I gotta love truth. We need to fan into a flame our relationship with God, that the more we learn about him in the pages of Scripture, the more we'll love the God of truth, and the more we'll long to be people of truth. And I have had a lot of people arguing with me about this message already. I've preached it twice and they don't like it. And you know what I picture and what I sense and what I get so often from these folks is, don't you see that God is truth and he wants his people to be people of truth? That's why I took your mind at the beginning of this message to the New Jerusalem, because in that domain, truth will reign. And you and I need to reflect that lordship now. That's what it's all about. That's why we're called the ecclesia, the church, the called out ones. We're different than the world, or at least we're supposed to be. Oh, that's the way they sell cars. That's not the way we're supposed to sell cars. That's the way they keep clients. That's not the way we're supposed to keep clients. That's the way they interrogate criminals. That's not supposed to be the way we interrogate criminals. You understand what I'm saying to you? Because we love truth. We love honesty. Or at least we're supposed to. But when we start loving we more than we love truth, it's easy to compromise. Jot this down. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 11. Three simple statements. Do not steal, do not lie, do not deceive. Okay, lie, deceive, stealing. That's pretty big to put that in the same verse, isn't it? I mean, if I said to you, yeah, my wife's just been picked up for shoplifting at Macy's, you know, and Tony just knocked off a 7-Eleven, you know, he was, out of money or whatever, so he's in jail, he won't be here this morning. Yeah, Mark's been embezzling, money too, but, stealing, it's okay. You're going to say, wait a minute, man, the integrity of our church is compromised. Pastor's wife shoplifting? Staff members holding up 7-Elevens? Wow, man. Oh, how can we represent the gospel in our community if we steal? I mean, that's bad. I suppose then, if Christ and God is going to put lying and stealing side by side, then you are that outraged when there's exaggeration, twisting of truth, contorting of reality, when we keep our clients the same way non-Christians keep their clients. Don't lie. Don't deceive. It's one of the Big Ten. You recognize that, right? It made the big list, right? Two rocks, two rock tablets. God only had so much room. He put down 10 big ones. It's on it. It's on the list. Don't lie. You committed to that? David wasn't. When times got tough and his stomach grumbled a little bit, he said, if I tell the truth, man, he may tell me hit the road. I got to come up with a story now. And he lied. Whew, I got my bread. I got my sword. Thanks, Ahimelech. I'm out of here. Verse 10. That day, David fled from Saul. He went to Achish, king of Gath. Now, his spiritual acumen is now completely blurred, because he has fallen to deception. He's playing around with fire. I can't expect him to be thinking straight, and certainly this move shows me he's not. You know where Gath is, right? Does that ring a bell for you? One of the five principal cities of Philistia. The Philistines, hello, he's going to one of the big cities of the enemies of God. He is going now to the city. Do you remember a big tall guy came out of that town? His name was Goliath. He had killed him not too long ago. And now you're going there to find refuge from the king of Israel? Hello? Sometimes when we start deceiving, we lose all touch with morality. We get disjointed from what's right. We start floating from the dock of virtue because we just weave this little tangled web in our lives. Sound familiar? It's true. David shows up at Gath, says, hello, I'd like to be a new refugee in your country, if that's okay. And he's got his suitcase there, and look what happens. One of the servants of Achish said, hey, I've seen that face. Isn't that David, king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances and say, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? About that time, beads of sweat break out on David's forehead. Oops, gulp. He takes those words to heart, underscore it, and he was very much afraid of Achish, king of Gath. What has happened to our courageous warrior? It's falling apart. He starts to deceive, and now he's in trouble. He knows deception worked earlier in this chapter. He knows he can get out of a jam if he just tells a lie. So he says, I got a solution. Oh, I know I stood in the shadow of the great giant, and I killed him because I said I will not compromise, and I'm going to be zealous for the glory and the honor of God. But now I'm in a jam, and I'm really afraid. Oh, I know I killed a giant and risked my life with a slingshot and a stone, but now I'm afraid that if I tell the truth and stand up for truth, I might die right here in the palace of a foreign king. Question, do you think the God of the universe is going to let the next king of Israel die on the floor of the palace of a king of Philistia? I don't think so. What does he need right now? Courage. What does he need? He needs to stand up for truth. He needs to say, darn it, you're absolutely right. I am that guy. And if you want to mess with me, you think I can do something with a slingshot. Look at this sword. Do you see this? I'm the next king of Israel. And I don't mean to be cocky now, but you better give me refuge here because, you know, I'm here and you don't want to mess with me. Why? Because God loves me and God is on my side. And you're not going to mock or blaspheme or defile God or his leaders. That may have sounded prideful, but something to that effect would have made chapter 21 a chapter 17. But instead, chapter 21 is dark. Because David, look at the next verse. The text says, he pretended. That's code for lying. Right? That means that you act in a way that makes them think something that you yourself don't believe to be true. That's the definition of lying. David pretends to be insane. He starts going nuts. While he was in their hands, he was sitting there in front of the king. He starts going, yeah, I want to be a refugee. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And he starts, you know, they recognize him. So now he's bouncing off the walls. The text says here what? He's acting like a madman. He's making marks on the door of the gate. He's letting saliva run down his beard. This is disgraceful. This is our giant killer, who in one chapter can look at a giant with integrity and say, "You're going down," and now he's so afraid he can't trust God. He's trusting in his deception, though, hoping that might deliver him. Does it work? Hey, man, it works. It works. Crime pays. Deception works. Lying, man, it'll help you. And it does. Achish said to his servants, "Look at that guy. He's insane. Why'd you bring this guy to me? Am I short of madmen that you bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? Hello, we got enough crazy people in Gath, you know? Get him out of here." David says, "Whew, got out of that mess." But in doing so, he showed that in these few verses, he trusted in his deception more than he trusted in his God. Would you note this carefully? Number 2 on your outline. If you and I want to avoid that incessant, continual, insidious temptation to compromise the truth for convenient deceptions, you and I need to trust in God more than we trust in our lies. And you recognize you don't lie unless you're putting some stock in that lie. You're saying, "That lie can help me here. That lie can keep bread on the table. That lie can keep our business solvent. That lie can help encourage this patient. That lie can do something for me. So I'm going to use that lie, and I'm going to do something good with it." I mean, I doubt I have very many people here that are thinking of creative ways to lie to do bad things. If you are, we need to talk afterwards. But most of us are falling into the trap of deception, thinking it's going to accomplish something good. It'll helpful. It'll be beneficial. And sometimes if my back were against the wall, it can get me out of a big jam. And isn't that the way Abraham got his wife out of a jam? Isn't that the way that Isaac got his wife Rebecca out of a jam? Isn't that the way the Hebrew midwives got those infants out of a jam? Isn't that the way that Jonathan, if you read that passage carefully that we skimmed over last week, isn't that the way Jonathan got David out of a jam? Isn't that the way Michael, his wife, got him out of a jam? It's working. Yeah, it works for a time. And God may let you keep that account if you deceive your customer. And God may let you retain a little respect in the eyes of your children if you lie to them. It may happen for a time. But you're proving that you put more stock in deception than you do in God. And I put it this way, God can do a whole lot more with the truth than you can do with a lie. Do you recognize what I'm saying by that? You think you can do something with a lie, so you use it. But God, if you would only be truthful, could do even more with the truth, particularly if you tell the truth for the glory of God. You're telling me that if I'm honest about, you know, Ethel's dress, I can do something good? I don't get it. When it practically trickles down into the realities of my life, that doesn't make any sense. The truth always needs to be spoken in love. And there are times when, you know, you don't need my opinion and you don't need my words and you don't need my thoughts. There's times for me to shut up, not to deceive with my silence, but there's times for me not to tell you everything I think. But I cannot resort to deception. If I do, I am dabbling in Satan's toolbox. Did you catch that? Why do I say that? Because John 8:44 says what? It says Satan is a liar. When he lies, he speaks his native language. When he lies, it says, it is the essence of the enemy because he is a liar and he is the father of lies. Did you catch that? Who is the father of lies? Who is the instigator of deception? Do you think you can use Satan's strategies to accomplish God's goals? Oh, but I want to help this person, but I want to be nice to this person, but I want to keep this job, but I want to make a little bit more profit in our company. I want to manage in life a little better. Do you think God can do it with the truth? Well, I don't think so. Not in the short run. It certainly doesn't look that way. In the long run, God can always do more with the truth than you can do with a lie. And I know you can think of a lot of exceptions and say, well, those people lied and it seemed to work out okay. If we stopped preaching at the end of chapter 21, we'd say the same thing. David got out of 2 big jams by lying. He deceived verbally Ahimelech and seemed to get away with it. And he deceived Achish and seems to get away with it. Well, I'll show you the results of the first 9 verses in chapter 22. And you'll have to wait till another sermon to see how his deception of Achish fell apart later in his life. And because he sowed the seeds of deception, there was a price to pay. Note it carefully, chapter 22, verse number 1. The first price, though it doesn't seem that terrible, it is the repercussions and the natural outgrowth of his deception. It says, David left Gath and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and father's household heard about it, they went down there to see him. All those who were, note it carefully, in distress, in debt, or discontented gathered around him, and he became their leader. About 400 men were with him. Now, when you start deceiving and being shrewd and getting known for being a deceiver, you attract a certain kind of crowd. You get certain kinds of people that say, he's cool. And you know what? Instead of David rallying the men of integrity and spiritual leadership in the nation, he gets all the malcontents. He gets the people in distress, in debt, and discontented, and they say, okay, we're ready. We're with you, man. He gets the dregs of the nation instead of the best of the nation. Why? Because he's proved that he's playing their game. He's dabbling in the enemy's toolbox. The toolbox, which, by the way, Paul said, we will not speak falsehood that the truth of God may advance. We will not do evil that good may come. You can study that on your own. Romans chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. Great passage. Don't you ever think we can accomplish something better through Satan's means and Satan's tools? Because it will always backfire. In this case, short term, David gets the dregs of society that go along just fine with deception and lying. Drop down to verse 6. Now, when Saul hears that David has been discovered, he, in the middle of verse 6 through verse number 8, gives a speech to his men and says, we got to get this guy. Doeg, remember him, chapter 21, walks in and says, hey, I know where that guy is. He must have been lying. He was out there at Ahimelech's group in Nob inquiring of the Lord, verse 10 says, and Ahimelech gave him provisions and the sword of Goliath the Philistines. King's eyes went, right? Ahimelech, huh? Get that guy in here. King sends for the priest Ahimelech, son of Hittub, and his father's whole family, who were priests at Nob. And they came to the king. I wonder what the king wants. Saul said, listen now, son of Hittub. Yes, my lord? Saul said, why have you conspired against me? Now, did he conspire against the king? No, he thought he was helping out the king. Secret mission. Secret mission. I helped him. Well, that ain't going to fly here because David lied to you. Why have you conspired against me, son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him so that he rebelled against me and lies in wait for me as he does today? Ahimelech answered the king, I really don't know what you're talking about. Who of all your servants is as loyal as David, the king's son, captain of your bodyguard, highly respected in your household? He's even out there all by himself on a secret mission. Was this the first time I inquired of God for him? Of course not. Let not the king accuse your servant or any of his father's family, for your servant knows nothing at all about the whole affair. King said, yeah, sure. You're going to die. Ahimelech, you and your father's whole family. And the king ordered the guards at his side, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, yet they did not tell me. None of that is true. None of it is true. And you can imagine, can't you, the horror in Ahimelech's mind? Oh my goodness. I believed him, and I whistled my way into the palace of the guy who wants to kill him, and now he's going to want to kill me. If he knew that David was a fugitive, he either would have said, I ain't going to go see Saul. He may have gone out there to the desert with David. And you know, David might have been surrounded with a bunch of priests, not a bunch of malcontents. Instead, he's out with the dregs of the nation, and the righteous guys are standing before the king being told they've got to be killed. Now, there's a little respect amongst the king's officials who weren't willing to raise a hand and strike the priests of the Lord. Thank goodness. Well, for a verse at least. Verse 18. King said, okay, Doeg, these guys won't do it, but you're the eyewitness. You saw this happen. You turn and strike down the priests. So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck them down, and he killed 85 men who wore the linen ephod, no swords, totally unarmed, standing there outside the palace. He killed them all. He also put to the sword Nob, the town of the priests, with its men and women and children and infants and cattle and donkeys and sheep and all the seminary students and all the people wanting to learn from the rabbis and all the people inquiring of God who had a spiritual interest. They were all killed because David lied. One guy escaped. Abathar, we got to keep that priestly line going. He's the son of Ahimelech, son of Hittub. God takes him out of that mess. He escapes and flees to join David. He tells David that Saul has killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abathar, Doeg, that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he was sure to tell Saul. I am responsible for the death of your father's whole family. Now, this may be a little melodramatic for you, because you're thinking, man, I'm just fudging on the truth a little bit on my taxes. Give me a break. You know, people here are getting killed. You know, all I'm trying to illustrate by this is when we deceive, we send into effect the ripples of our deception that always has consequences. Number three on your outline, if you and I are going to avoid and conquer the temptation of convenient deceptions, you and I need to always remember that lies cost. Never forget that. Lies will cost you. You deceive, and you are going to suffer, because God will not have it in the lives of his saints. And though God could not go in and treat him like Ananias and Sapphira, because he was promised to be the next king of Israel, God had to say, well, you may not be able to be justly, in this case, punished, but I'm telling you what, you're going to have on your conscience 85 priests, and you're going to have on your conscience all their families and all their possessions, because you stood there and lied to them. Do you think God took lying seriously? Do you think God was sending David to school to learn to love truth and honesty? You bet he was. And he learned the hard way. Maybe you and I need to learn. It was great being the younger brother. I don't know if you were the younger sibling in your family, but there were some great advantages to that. I know it was disadvantages, and you want to do everything your older brother did, but you know, I could learn from my brother's mistakes. I mean, I saw what he got, you know, slammed for. I saw the things that, you know, he did wrong. And if I was halfway smart and any brain cells were really firing in my mind, I could say, you know what, I ain't going to do that, because that really got you burnt. Your elder brother in the faith has been slammed because of his deception, and slammed hard. You and I can avoid getting the God of truth upset with our lives so as to disrupt it in some way. Could you and I today search our hearts with honesty and say, God, you are a God of truth. I want to be a man of truth. I want to be a woman of truth. I want to be someone who speaks the truth, even when it costs me. Even if it puts me in a corner where I have nothing to trust in but you, I'm going to be a man or a woman of truth. Let's go there. Let's stand without compromise with David in the Valley of Elah and say, we're not going to compromise. We are men and women of truth.
We are men and women of truth, no matter the consequences. You're listening to Focal Point in a series called Saints Who Lie from Pastor Mike Fabares. Now, if you missed any of this two-part message, make sure to listen online when you visit focalpointradio.org. You can also listen on your favorite podcasting app or through the free Focal Point app. Well, even if you're not facing the fallout from telling lies, we all encounter bumps on our path. But God is always faithful, and he will provide a way through the storms of life. Along those lines, Pastor Mike has chosen an encouraging book as this month's featured resource. It's called The Bumps Are What You Climb On by Dr. Warren Wiersbe. During his public ministry as a pastor, author, and radio Bible teacher, Dr. Wiersbe was known for his sound Bible teaching, charm, and wit. The Bumps Are What You Climb On is a wonderful resource for anyone facing frustration, depression, disappointment, or loneliness. And you'll especially appreciate the 30 brief chapters offering meditations to help you face each day with God's hope. We look forward to sending you a copy of this helpful book when you give a donation of any amount to the Ministry of Focal Point. It's a small token of our gratitude for your support. Request it today when you call 888-320-5885 or online go to focalpointradio.org. If you'd rather send your donation by mail, write to Focal Point, Post Office Box 2850, Laguna Hills, California, 92654. You might also consider joining the team of monthly supporters called Focal Point Partners. Now, these are people just like you who listen to the program and value reaching the world with the truth of God's Word. Our partners help us minister to others around the world by providing free access to all of Pastor Mike's sermons, devotionals, and videos, and helping cover our radio airtime costs. So sign up today when you go online to focalpointradio.org or call 888-320-5885. Well, I'm Dave Drewy, inviting you to join us again on Tuesday as we begin a series called Desert Instructions, right here on Focal Point.
Hey there, Pastor Mike here. We're almost out of time, but before we go, I wanted to personally invite you to contact us here. Let us know how we can be praying for you. Head on over to focalpointradio.org and click the contact page, or send me a note on Facebook, facebook.com/PastorMike or twitter.com/PastorMike. Can't wait to hear from you.
Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.